Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Tulane SOPA, the Tulane School of Professional Advancement, offering online programs designed for working professionals who want to earn a certificate, complete their degree, or begin their graduate studies. Professional advancement begins at sopa.tulane.edu.
From Collins on St. Charles Avenue in Uptown New Orleans, we're Out to Lunch with Peter Ricchiuti, Tulane University A.B. Freeman School of Business professor and director of the Birkenroad Reports. It's business, New Orleans style.
Hi, I'm Peter Ricchiuti. Welcome to Out to Lunch. Dr. Nicholas Bazan is a world-renowned neuroscientist with a research lab in Stockholm, Sweden, and another here in New Orleans. When Dr. Bazan was a guest on Out to Lunch, he pointed out that compared to other fields of medicine, treatment for conditions of the human brain are at a primitive stage. For example, the current standard of care for traumatic brain injury is rest. Part of the reason there's no medication for neurological conditions like dementia, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's is the way pharmacological research is conducted. For obvious reasons, there are rigorous controls on the development of neurological drugs before they're allowed to be tested on humans. The only new medications that are allowed to be trialed by humans are ones that have proven safe in trials on animals. But an astounding 94% of these neurological drugs fail because preclinical results on animals can't predict results in humans. It's with this in mind that Lowry Curley founded his revolutionary biomedical research company, Exosim. Exosim simulates brain cells so drug developers can try out a drug on a human brain without having an actual human being attached to it. We last talked to Lowry when this was all just getting off the ground in 2016, a couple of years after the company was founded in New Orleans. Today, Exosim has two laboratories, 30 employees, three separate research divisions, and a bunch of industry-leading patents. Lowry, it's a pleasure to see you again. Welcome back to Out to Lunch.
Hi, Peter. Yeah, thank you for having me.
The human brain is a delicate organ. That's why it's housed in a hard case, the skull. But there are some activities where even the skull and a protective helmet aren't enough to prevent the brain from getting injured. One of those activities is military combat. Veterans who lose limbs in combat have established pathways to recovery, but veterans with brain injury, spinal cord injury, or other neurological conditions can go undiagnosed. Veterans who struggle with these issues find themselves isolated and lonely, and it's part of the reason for the high rate of veteran suicide. Here in New Orleans, a program called Headway is setting out to solve these issues by placing affected veterans in a purpose-built housing development. It's called Bastion Community of Resilience. It's a $14 million, 5.5-acre neighborhood of homes in Gentilly in which veterans with neurological wounds live among other veterans and volunteers. We spoke to the founder of Bastion, Dylan Tett, back in 2016 when the site was under construction. Today, Bastion is a living neighborhood, and we're joined by its executive director, Jackson Smith. Jackson, welcome Out to Lunch.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter.
Lowry, there are pharmaceutical companies and research labs around the world developing drugs they hope will successfully treat or cure Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and dementia. Given the potentially huge amounts of money at stake for whomever is successful, I can only assume this field is very competitive. So I'm wondering how Exosim fits into this. Are the 30 employees in your labs building the platforms that other researchers use to develop and test drugs, or are you also conducting research into medication?
It's a great question, and you know, it's kind of evolving through the years, right? We have been utilizing the majority of our team members to build these tools, really understand these tools, leverage these tools. We're at a point now where they're scaling, right? The tools are working. We're building them so quickly that now we're gaining so much knowledge, and we're making sure we set ourselves up so that we can do both. And I think that's a really important point of how we can best leverage this. So continue to have these tools that we work with other pharmaceutical companies, you know, on cures, and then, you know, start to accelerate some ourselves.
Jackson, almost every New Orleanian can tell you we're the birthplace of jazz and the cocktail, but I suspect relatively few of us know we're the home of the Bastion Community of Resilience and the Headway Neurological Healthcare Program, both of which are innovative initiatives for veterans that only exist here in New Orleans. These are enormous achievements, and they're ongoing projects that require a significant amount of financing to run and to continue growing. Where does the revenue come from to run Bastion's day-to-day operations?
So historically, we have been entirely reliant on donations and grants from foundations, many of them local here to the New Orleans area. But as we've determined the effectiveness of these programs and the much, much larger need out there, both in the local New Orleans area and beyond, it is clear that a significant expansion and replication of these programs is needed. And so that is driving us increasingly towards longer term and more stable sources of funding, like multi-year federal grants, eventually potentially a contract with the VA for the provision of this program, et cetera.
I believe Bastion isn't finished growing. You're building a $9 million wellness center. Where are you getting funding for this kind of growth? Is it the same place?
So we're problem solvers at Bastion, and that is a very, very large project for an organization of our size. We have been fortunate to assemble in the last year a combination of some very generous support from the state through the Capital Outlay Program, thanks in large part to our local state rep, Matt Willard, State Senator Bowie, and some others. And then new market tax credits, which are being provided both at the state and federal level, plus some private fundraising. So it's all come together in a really synergistic way.
And Lowry, where do these brain cells come from?
So we get them ultimately from skin biopsies, actually. So any adult can take a little bit of their skin and turn them into stem cells, and we can grow that into a brain.
So it's not a cadaver.
It is not a cadaver.
Okay, all right. That should have been my very first question. Jackson, are you, let's see, best way to put it, are you in competition with the VA, or are you filling in gaps for the VA? Where do you fit?
We're not in competition with the VA at all. We are very much complementary. There are things that the VA provides that we could not possibly provide. They have resources and higher level medical care that are critically needed by our veterans, particularly across the population at a level that we'll never be able to replicate. But the VA is not designed to exist in and share in the lives of the veteran on a day-to-day basis, in their homes, in their community. They're not configured for that, and our veterans need that just as much. You know, you mentioned isolation and loneliness around conditions like PTSD and the brain injury. The VA can do certain things to help with that from a clinical and benefit standpoint. They cannot live in that veteran's life with them the way that we can at the Bastion community. So we are very much complementary. And in fact, especially with respect to our brain injury program, in most of those cases, our staff are working and coordinating regularly with the treatment team that serves that veteran at the VA.
Now, Lowry, because it's a business show, I have to ask you this. You're growing, you're successful. Are you profitable?
We're not profitable yet. We are revenue generating, have worked with some biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world, but we really are focused more on growth. So we're, you know, looking for investment to continue to grow rather than focusing on profitability.
And Jackson, I was kind of surprised to hear that there are 15,000 veterans in New Orleans, and 2,000 of them are there for neurological reasons to they come to you.
Well, the number that we rely on is 15,000 total veterans across the greater New Orleans area, and 2,000 of whom who are affected by one or more brain injuries. Now, that number is important. That number is higher than the number that the VA is tracking. And that's not the VA's fault. That is reflective of the fact that a significant portion of our brain-injured population, both veteran and civilian, are not diagnosed. And if they're not diagnosed, that means that they are not getting benefits or treatment for that injury from the VA. So we really tend to look at the undiagnosed portion of the population as a particularly urgent one in terms of needing to get out and connect our services to them. But yes, we look at our quote-unquote demand signal, if you will, as roughly 2,000 brain-injured affected veterans in the New Orleans area.
Jackson, one of the things that's incredibly impressive is you're an attorney, you're a lawyer, and you gave up that. I think that would have been more lucrative than what you're doing now. Why?
Well, the easy answer is I wasn't much of a lawyer. You know, I spent about 4 years as an attorney. I met my wife in law school. I went to law school on the GI Bill, so it was free. And to be honest, I entered the legal profession because I wanted to get back to New Orleans so bad. And it was the best way that I could find to get here. But when I ended up in the profession and in the private sector in particular, I found that the world seemed to be falling apart a little bit around me. You know, COVID got into full swing not long after I joined the workforce, and it really felt like I needed to be out professionally serving with respect to these problems like I had done in the military. I didn't know how to do that, though, so I spent a long time, frankly, being pretty unhappy and feeling like I wasn't doing what I ought to be doing. And so when this opportunity landed in my lap, it was like a winning lottery ticket, and doubly so because I came home to a wife and a six-month-old first daughter who were both supportive and understanding about Dad wanting to jump into a brand-new career shortly after graduating law school. You know, so I could not have been luckier in that respect.
Lowry, what you do makes this research, is it faster or more accurate, or is it both?
It's both, absolutely both. Yeah, faster because the tests we do, you know, really we can get the results much more quickly than you could in an animal test. And then, of course, you know, the expectation and what we've proved so far is the drugs that we say look like they're going to be effective because it's human cells, you know, that is going to translate to getting the medicine to patients faster.
And I think probably listeners are thinking, why didn't a big, you know, the Eli Lilly's or those companies come up with this before you? I mean, they've got hundreds of researchers spending zillions of dollars. What is it?
Yeah, we kind of wondered the same thing when we got started. But I think what I've learned now, 8 years later, it's really, really hard. And I say that as a joke, but these pharmaceutical companies, they have their expertise, and that's developing drugs. Right, their expertise isn't necessarily in developing tools to help that process, and that's where they look to people who spend all of their time doing that, and that's us.
Jackson, I had read that these housing units are built specifically for veterans with these issues. What's the layout?
So, our sort of bumper sticker is we are the first intentional living community for disabled veterans and their families in the country, and that we were built and designed from the ground up to provide that. And just like you mentioned, that is reflected in the layout and construction of the homes themselves. If you come to Bastion, we have a very signature look to the homes in the community, and they are arranged. They're in side-by-side units, so usually something like a one-bedroom and a three-bedroom right next to each other that share a front porch. And then a corresponding pair of homes right across from them with their front porches facing. So they create a little pod of four. And those front porches are only about 6 feet across from each other. I mean, you can throw a ping pong ball back and forth. And so what that creates is that every home is situated within this communal sort of pod, where when you come out of your home in the morning, when you come home in the evening, you are going to socialize whether you like it or not. And your neighbors are going to see you, they're going to interact with you, they're going to observe your patterns of life and come to understand and appreciate what is normal for you, which is critical. Because when that baseline changes, because you are experiencing some difficulty, your neighbors are going to see it first. And they will be the ones who come to our staff on site and say, hey, you need to go check on John, something's not right with him. I think, as best as I can provide a depiction of how the community works. The first layer of defense is your neighbors, and then they elevate issues to the clinical staff on site where needed, or the staff provide that support where needed. But at the beginning and end of every day, it is your neighbors who are taking care of you and you of them.
Now, these people have all had similar experiences that the rest of us haven't. Does that make it more cohesive?
Well, the interesting thing is that our community is actually designed and set up in a way to kind of maximize diversity of experiences. People are often surprised to learn that only 80%, not 100%, of the population of Bastion, the resident population, are veterans. There's a couple reasons for that. Number one, under fair housing laws, if everybody is going to live under an annual lease, as they do at Bastion, then those units need to be made available to the general public in accordance with fair housing laws. But there's a key benefit to the community that emerges from that. many veterans, and I saw this with many, many of the Marines with whom I served in combat and experienced some of it myself. It's easy to develop an attitude over time that if you didn't go through what we went through, if you didn't go where we went, you're not going to get it, and you don't get me. And that attitude over time turns a guy into an island, puts walls up around him, and convinces him, teaches him, nobody around me understands me, so there's nobody around me that I can go to for help. And now I'm in that isolated position that you described earlier. At Bastion, it is a diverse community. You can expect that one of those four neighbors around you is probably going to be a non-veteran. And so we get veterans who come to our community with that kind of attitude. And what they find is, you know, maybe they show up thinking, I lost my best friend in combat, and I couldn't save him, and I've never gotten over that. Comes to find out that his next-door neighbor never served in the military at all, but she grew up in the St. Bernard Projects. And she watched her older brother get killed in a stick-up when she was 5 years old, and she couldn't save him. And all of a sudden, this veteran realizes, I got a lot in common with this lady. We both understand a lot about trauma and survivor's guilt and all of these things that veterans struggle with, and now the walls start to come down. And the veteran begins to understand, I am not an island. And in fact, the world is full of people with whom, who are waiting to relate with me and who can relate to me. So that's... diversity is one of our greatest strengths in that way at Bastion.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Peter Ricciuti. I'm talking with Jackson Smith from Military Veterans Village, Bastion Community of Resilience, and Lowry Curley from neurological research company AxoSim. We'll continue our conversation when we come right back from this short break.
Out to Lunch is brought to you by Basics Underneath, fine lingerie, personalized fitting, curated swimsuits and workout wear, Uptown on Magazine Street, and at basicsunderneath.com. And by Infinite Health Integrative Medicine Center, specializing in longevity, health optimization, and regenerative medicine. More information at yourinfinitehealth.com. And by Tracy Moore, broker, realtor, and partner at Rev Realtors, offering over 20 years of experience representing buyers, sellers, and investors. Learn more at tracy.revrealtors.com.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Peter Ricciuti. I'm talking with Jackson Smith from Military Veterans Village Bastion Community of Resilience and Lowry Curley from the neurological research company AxoSim. Lowry, you have made some significant acquisitions over the years, and dollar-wise significant for a company of your size. What do you look for? I can't imagine how you price them. I can't imagine what you're getting. What should I be thinking of?
It really starts with the technology. You know, at the end of the day, we're a science-driven company. And so when we're looking outward, how can we build ourselves? How can we add additional tools or platforms? You know, we look, what's the industry leader, right? Who is everyone else looking at saying, this is at the forefront, this is the top of the line. So it starts there. But then when we're evaluating it, I would say, perhaps more importantly, you need to know that your customers want it, right? That the applications that it serves are the ones people want to pay for. And then, you know, as once you move beyond that, then of course, you know, you're discussing whether it's with a university or another company, what an acquisition could look like. And you know, that's quite a negotiation that I've learned a lot about. But of course, it all starts with, is there a product and is there a market?
And I think would you get labor, patents, things
yeah,
like that?
No, when we, so our biggest acquisition back in October, we got a new facility outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota, four key team members that came with that, I think six different patents, as well as the facility itself. So it came with all of those.
Jackson, I always wanted to ask this question. When you have a service people committing suicide, is there something, I don't even know the best way to put this, but then more service people start thinking about suicide?
Yeah, you know, I'm speaking here not as a clinician, which I'm not. I say this as a veteran and somebody who's been a member of this population for the last 14 years since coming home from combat. I am a big believer in the contagion of suicide. I am a big believer, you know, we see this same issue with the criminal justice system here in New Orleans. Growing up, nobody in my family ever went to jail. Nobody ever got arrested. And if somebody did, it would have been the biggest deal in the world. It would have rocked my family to its foundations. But what if people in my family had been going to jail for a long time, for a lot of different reasons, and all of a sudden certain things become more normalized and seem like entirely different kinds of consequences? We've seen that happen with suicide in the veteran population. It's not correlated necessarily to combat. We've not seen veteran suicides go down as the intensity of combat has decreased and combat has effectively ceased entirely. We see suicides among young service members who've not been to combat at all. This thing has really taken root in the veteran population. And with each additional person that a veteran knows, each fellow veteran, it becomes a little bit more real and it becomes a little bit more tangible and it seems more and more like an option. There is not a way to combat that other than through relationships and people. That's not a thing that a pill can fix. That is a thing that has to be attacked and fought across relationships, people to people. And I've seen that happen among my own peers as veterans. You would be amazed watching what happens on Facebook when somebody puts out a warning flare basically saying, hey, we got a guy in Macomb, Georgia. Anybody in the area, this is his address, get there now. And you've got people saying, I live in South Carolina, but I'm getting in the car, I'll be there in 4 hours. You know, I don't know this guy from Adam.
It's an unusual camaraderie the military only has.
Oh, for sure, yeah. For sure. And it is unusually intense, which makes it hurt that much more when you lose it, which all service members do when they leave the military. There's no getting around that.
And Lowry, we talk to people all the time that say they have trouble finding labor in New Orleans, and the labor you need is so specific. Have you had much luck there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had luck both hiring, you know, local talent and attracting certainly talent from, you know, from outside of New Orleans or Louisiana. But there's, you know, phenomenal universities here, right? With Xavier, Tulane, LSU, you know, multiple med schools. So we really have been able to really, you know, recruit who we needed to. And something I believe a lot in is building people within the team, right? And so I think in that perspective, there's not a lot of biotechnology companies here. And so the people who want to jump into that are hungry and driven and want to grow. And really, that's a big value of ours is, you know, are you going to want to grow, develop yourself, build something from the ground up?
And you're in the Bioinnovation Center. So if they're anywhere, they're with you. There's What about, we talked about the acquisitions you've made, but wouldn't you be a prime candidate to be bought out yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's something that we are certainly building towards. You know, our mission is to discover cures for these diseases. But of course, we have investors, right? We're all putting a lot of work into this. And I think ultimately for us to realize that, it will be being acquired by, you know, whether it's a pharmaceutical company who really wants to utilize all of our tools, or potentially some of the companies that do the animal testing themselves now. You know, of course, they see that maybe animal testing isn't going away, but certainly there are tools coming that will do things a lot better, right? And so they're looking to acquire companies like ours as well. And I think that's how we get even more resources to accelerate what we're doing even further.
And I'm thinking, you obviously thought this out before you did any of this, but how do you protect patents in this case? Imagine you have some pretty specialized people there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have multiple patent attorneys, you know, that work on this. We work with multiple universities. Our first technology license was from Tulane University. We've also licensed technology from Johns Hopkins University, University of California at San Diego now, and University of Central Florida in Orlando. So being able to work with multiple universities, you know, that offers some protection unto itself. Of course, we are filing our own patents, but it's a constant game, and that this is so cutting edge, and there is so much money in it. You know, of course, other people want to do it as well.
Jackson, why is this kind of arrangement, which really seems to work, only in New Orleans, or why did it start in New Orleans?
Well, there's a two-part answer to that. The first one is the easy one, and Lowry, you said it earlier. How are all the big national level folks not doing this already? Well, because it's really hard. And I've taken to describing it this way, that our approach at Bastion, this way of putting neighbors in a position, giving them the opportunity to take care of each other in the way that military service members were trained to take care of each other in the military. It's so simple, right? It's sort of like, how were we not doing this all along? It is very simple, but it's hard. There is so much art to it, and the needs across the population are so varied. But why does it does finally exist in one place, and why here? That one is very straightforward. The answer is Hurricane Katrina. Bastion is built across the street from where the London Avenue Canal breached, directly across the street. We are at ground zero of Katrina's devastation. And our founder had just left the Army, came home from Iraq, got out, moved to New Orleans, Katrina hits. So whatever plans he had, they're off, and he's now participating in the rebuilding effort. And he sees the way that New Orleanians, who lost everything, and many of whom did not have a whole lot to begin with, are still finding ways to reach their hands out to one another, neighbor to neighbor, and say, hey, I might not have anything to offer other than my hand, but I will offer you that, and we'll get through this together. He saw that, sees this special, uniquely New Orleanian way that people are picking up the pieces and rebuilding together, and meanwhile, he starts losing friends in the Army. And he starts losing friends in the Army back home. Folks who had gone to war like he did came back and lost the war back home. And as that problem starts to really metastasize, he looks at that, and he looks at the way these neighbors are taking care of each other in New Orleans, and he says, there has to be a way to connect these dots. There has to be a way to take what these people are doing for each other and bring it to veterans like my friends who are dying without it. And that's how Bastion was born.
Lowry, how are we doing on this work that you've set upon? Are we getting close to finding a cure for any of these?
You know, it depends on the disease. There's obviously, unfortunately, a lot of neurodegenerative diseases, some I think more difficult than others. But in the last year or two, there's been really a lot more money going into pharmaceutical companies, investors, you know, other big companies that are really happening because they're starting to be wins in neuroscience. For a long time, no one wanted to do it. No one wanted to put money in it because it just wasn't working. But there's a lot of money for whoever figures it out, right? And, you know, Biogen has had a couple of examples with Alzheimer's where, to varying degrees of success, you know, they've gone through some clinical trials and there's not a cure yet. But just showing any kind of progress, I think, is opening up a little bit of hope and opening up, you know, pocketbooks where more and more companies are following through, right? Technologies like ours are being adopted faster and faster. So progress, no cure yet, but this progress is accelerating. The momentum is gathering really, really quickly.
For a medium-sized city in the south of the United States, New Orleans gets a lot of publicity. Most of it, even when it's generated by our own city and state agencies, focuses on what a great place New Orleans is to eat, drink, and listen to music. And it is. But we're so much more than that. One of these days, maybe we'll be recognized for being the home of Axosym, a company that's revolutionizing neurological medical research, and the Bastion Community of Resilience, pioneering healthcare and welfare for the military veterans. Lowry and Jackson, congratulations on the impressive achievements you've accomplished so far, and I look forward to keeping up with your continued success. Thank you both for taking the time to join me today on Out to Lunch.
Thank you very much. This was exciting.
Thanks so much, Peter.
My guests on Out to Lunch today have been Lowry Curley, co-founder and CEO of Axosym, and Jackson Smith, the executive director of Bastion Community of Resilience. We edited this show to fit into the time slot here on WWNO. You can hear our unedited conversation and find out more about Lowry and Jackson's groundbreaking enterprises by listening to the Out to Lunch podcast. You can find and subscribe to the Out to Lunch podcast on your podcast app and on our website, itsneworleans.com. If you want to know what we all look like, you can find photos from this show on itsneworleans.com and on our Out to Lunch social media. These photos were taken today by Jill LaFleur. You can find more of Jill's photos at LaFleurPhoto.com. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsneworleans.com and WWNO 89.9 FM. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our researcher is Amy Irvin. And today's show was engineered by Blake Longlinet. If you'd like to hear my conversation with neuroscientist Dr. Nicholas Bazan, you can find that on your podcast app by searching for the Out to Lunch episode called Neuro Push. To hear my earlier conversation with Lowry Curley, search for the episode called Innovations. And to hear my conversation with Dylan Tett, founder of Bastion, that episode is called Community Building. I'm Peter Ricciuti. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to meeting you again next week around the lunch table for more business, New Orleans style, on Out to Lunch.
Out to Lunch was recorded live at Collins on St. Charles Avenue. Collins serves lunch and dinner 7 days a week, hosts weddings and private events, features evenings of live jazz and more. Reservations for dining and hotel rooms are at thecollins.com. Collins is a member of New Orleans & Company. More information at neworleans.com. Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Tulane SOPA, the Tulane School of Professional Advancement, offering online programs designed for working professionals who want to earn a certificate, complete their degree, or begin their graduate studies. Professional advancement begins at sopa.tulane.edu. Mitchell Foreman wrote and performs all the music on Out to Lunch. You can hear Mitchell's music anywhere great jazz is sold or streamed, and at mitchellforeman.com. If you'd like to be part of Out to Lunch, to learn how your business or organization can become an Out to Lunch program partner, email info@inobroadcasting.com.